This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In the Seder this morning, Nitzavim, chapter 30, verse 11, chapter Lamed, verse Yud Aleph, it says the following: Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher anochi metzavcha hayom, this mitzvah which I am commanding you this day, there's a bit of dispute among the Mefoshim as to whether it's referring to the mitzvah mentioned immediately prior to this posuk, which is the mitzvah of tshuva, which is particularly apt at this time of the year, or whether it's talking about the Torah in general. However, it should be pointed out that you might remember from my Shabbos Shulah Shir last year that according to the Rambam, there is no mitzvah in the Torah of tshuva. All that there is a mitzvah is that when you do tshuva, you have to do vidui. And we learn that from another posuk, not from this one. So according to the Rambam, the previous mitzvah is not tshuva in any case. So many Mefoshim learn it on the Torah in general. Ki ha-mitzvah hazot, this mitzvah, that means this whole Torah. Moshe is now coming to the conclusion of the Torah. He's drawing the Torah to its close. And he says, this mitzvah which I have commanded you today, lo niflet hi mincha, it is not, niflet is a word that the whole shiur is going to dwell on, analyzing and defining, it is not niflet, whatever that means, from you, velo rechoiko hi, and it is not far, lo vashamayim hi, it's not in the heavens, lemo mi ale lano ashamayim aveitachena lano veyashmieno otavenasena, it's not in the heavens so that you might say, who will go up to the heavens to fetch it for us and teach it to us so that we can do it? The Lama Ever Layamhi, and it's not on the other side of the ocean, Lamo Miyava Lanu Elever Hayamvi Kachelan of Yashmieno Tavanasena, to say, who will travel over the seas to fetch it for us and teach it to us so that we can do it? Ki Karove Lecha Adavama Od, because the thing is very near to you, Beficha Uvilvovcha Laso, so it is in your mouth and in your heart to do it. Those are the psukim we're going to be dealing with, particularly with the word lo niflet hi mincha. It is not something from you. The questions here are the following. Unkelus translates lo niflet hi mincha as being lo mefarsha hi minach. It is not separate from you. It is not something far away from you in the sense of being different to you, something that you can't conceive of. Rashi translates it, lo niflet hi mimcha, lo mechusa hi mimcha. It is not covered from you. It is not something that you have to uncover. It's not hidden. You can. It's available to you. The first question is, the word niflet is very closely related to the word pele. Pele means wondrous. Niflaot, we talk about nisim v'niflaot, miracles and wonders. A pele is a wonder. And there seems to be a bit of an intimation here. Lo nifleti mimcha, it's not wondrous to you. In other words, not only does the Torah seem to be saying it's not difficult for you to achieve, but also there's a slight intimation which none of the Mefoshim talk about here, of using the word niflet, which means wonderful. It's almost as if the Torah is saying here that it's not, the Torah is not so magnificent for you. One has to just understand the relationship of the word pele, wonder, to this word that we're dealing with here. Secondly, Rashi says the following: Lo mechusahi mimcha. Lo niflet means it is not covered from you. Kemo she'ne'emar, as it says in Dvorim chapter Yud Zayin, chapter 17, ki yipale, it talks about the same concept there, or the same word rather. And it says, ki yipalei mimcha davar lamishpat ben dam ledan. If you're judging something and you don't know the din, then you go to Yerushalayim and you check up with the experts. And how does Unkelus translate ki yipalei? Says Rashi, arei yitkasi. When a thing will be covered up from you, when a thing will be beyond you, will be hidden from you. Why does Rashi have to go and bring a proof from Unkelus in chapter 17? If he wants to explain it the way Unkelus explains it, why doesn't he simply look at Unkelus on the spot here? And the strange thing is that on Unkelus on the spot here does not translate it the way he translates it in chapter 17. So in fact there is a machlokes, in fact there is a dispute between Rashi and Unkelus in the interpretation of this word niflet. There are a few chairs here if any of you want to The two questions so far are lo niflet, he implies a wondrousness, which the Torah isn't. Secondly, Rashi brings a proof from Unculus in chapter 17 that it means covered up, whereas here Unculus says separate. And lastly, then the Torah goes on to say it is not in the heaven, before that, it says, lo niflet hi mimcha, it is not covered up from you, and it is not far. Why doesn't it either just say it is not covered up and it is not far? Or doesn't say, or it should say, it is not covered from you and it is not far from you? Why does it say it is not covered from you and it is not far? And it leaves out the second from you. Those are our three questions to understand these psukim. Now we developed an idea in the Gemara Shir on Thursday night in the Tosfos that when a person is unable to do something, there can be one of two reasons for it. Either the thing is too strong, too big, or the person is too weak. It's very simple. It can't be anything else. If you are unable to achieve something, either you are too small, or the obstacle, the aim, is too big. And this concept is discussed philosophically, indirectly, in Bereshis. Because really you can say it amounts to the same thing. I mean, what big and small is really relative. So what do you mean, either it's too big or you're too small? You're too small to handle that big thing. For a little child, climbing onto a chair is an unachievable aim. Something that, what is it, the aim too big, the child's too small? For that child, the aim is too big, that's all it is. Where does it appear? In an interesting word. Sorry, before we go on. When Rashi says that niflet means covered, covered is an inadequacy in the individual. Okay? Covered means that you don't know where it is. It's not that the thing isn't there. It's there, but you can't see it. So when a thing is covered, it means that you are unable to perceive it. It's an inadequacy in the individual. Now, if we could find the word niflet used in connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam, we could test the meaning more carefully. Because if it's used in the connection with Ribbono Shel Olam, you can't say it's covered up. Because if it's covered up, that means that there's an inadequacy. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is not inadequate. So I found a place where niflet is used in connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. In Bereshit, in chapter 18, verse 14. Sarah has just been informed that she's going to have a child, and she's already in her 90s. And she laughs. And Hashem gets angry with her for laughing and says, Hayipaleh me Hashem dover, is there anything which is beyond the Ribbono Shel Olam? Again, the word Hayipaleh used. Now let's see how this is translated. Says the Ramban, what this means is Hayipaleh, is there anything so wondrous that the Ribbono Shel Olam can't achieve it? There are many things that a human being can't achieve because they're so wondrous. We can't get to certain places, we can't travel beyond our galaxy. Why? It's just too big, it's too massive, it's too wondrous. Not because we're too small. As big and as adequate as we can be, there are just things that are bigger than us. We can't get there. So the Ramban puts in this concept in Yipale of wonder. Right? This is the first time we see the concept of the word Pele used, and it used not in the sense that Rashi explains in our posuk, but used in the more literal sense of wondrousness. Says the Ramban, what God is saying to Sarai is, why are you laughing? Is there anything which is so wondrous that I can't do? In other words, he's criticizing Sarai. He says to Sarai, I don't suspect that you're laughing because you think I'm inadequate. I, God, am inadequate. I know you think that I'm wonderful, but you think this is just too much. Is there anything that's too much for the Ribbono Shel Olam? That's how the Ramban translates ki hayipaleh me Hashem davar in that verse. Says Unculus, let's see how he goes here, hayitkasa min kadam Hashem. Unculus here uses another word. Is there anything which is covered from the Ribbono Shel Olam? Unculus uses inadequacy. That means God is criticizing Sarah for laughing at his inadequacy. Because if something's covered, it means you're trying to imply that there is a way you could have a child, but I don't know that way. That's what covered means. You don't have the key. There's a way you can get to Mars. If you have the technology, you can do it. If you have the key, you can open the door. And when a thing is covered, what you're really saying is that you don't have the key. So the Ramban says, no, Sarah is not criticizing God for not having the key. Sarah is just saying this is just too much of a miracle. God doesn't do such things. Not that he cannot, but he doesn't do such things. Says God, there's nothing which is too wondrous for me. for me to have a little flower open in the morning is no less wondrous than that you should have a child. I can do anything, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. There are no degrees of wonder for me. Everything's a miracle and nothing's a miracle. Says Unkelus, no. Hayit kasa. Is there something which is covered up from me? Is there anything to which I don't have the key? Is there anything to which I don't have the technology to know how to do it? Says Rashi. Hayipale ketar gumo. It's like Unkelus. Hayit kasi. Is there anything covered up? But Rashi now uses a principle which I'll show you in a moment, and he now explains the pasuk. Bechi shum davar mufla umufrad umuchusami meni milasot kiratzoni. Is there anything so wondrous and so separate and covered from me that it would stop me doing as I want? So the Ramban joins Unkelus. So Rashi joins Unkelus and the Ramban together, and the Ramban in fact says that that's what Rashi does. He says Unkelus is on a different tack altogether, but Rashi combines his, the Ramban's view, with Unkelus's. And Rashi has an interesting concept. Rashi says, what is wonder? Wonder is when you look at something that is beyond you. That's what wonder is. So for a child to look at an adult jumping over a chair, that's a wonder. That's incredible. But for the adult, it's nothing. For an ordinary human being to see somebody run a mile in 4 minutes, that's a wonder. It's a pele. But for a person that can run it in 3 minutes and 59 seconds, it's nothing to run it in 4 minutes. It's taken for granted, it's easy. The concept of wonder, says Rashi, is a concept of something which is beyond you and covered, where it's beyond you and you don't have the technology. The moon used to be a very romantic thing, and lots of poetry was written about the moon. I'm sure that no poetry will ever be written about the moon again. It's not romantic anymore. You can get there. It's possible to go there. We have the technology to get there. It lost its romance when we could get there. When we had the technology of removing the mask, of removing that which was a barrier between us and the moon, we lost a bit of the romance that was represented to us by the moon. Because the moon was something visible but beyond us. Covered by this barrier of a lack of technological know-how. So says Rashi, what this means in Bereshit is, V'chi shum davar mufla, is there anything so wonderful, u'mufrad u'mechusa, and it's separate and covered mimeni from me, milasot tirtzoni, that it should stop me doing my will? So now we get an understanding of the word niflet, an understanding of the word pele. It is a wondrousness created by an inability to achieve, by a lack of technology. And it's interesting that in English we use the same word. We say a wonder, and we say, I wonder how you do this. Wonder is also an expression of how you do something. A wonder is also a questioning. To use the word wonder, you're questioning something. And a wonder is also something which is wonderful, which is wondrous. Where we have a difficulty is in one other pasuk which I want to bring you, and then we'll discuss it. This ki yipale pasuk. Ki yipale mimcha davaret is something which is beyond you. You're trying to decide a halachic matter, and it's beyond you. You can't. Says Tosfot, says Unkelus, are yitkase. Again, he uses the word, something is covered from you. So you're a rov, and you brought a shaila, and you don't know the answer. Why don't you know the answer? Not because there is no answer, but because the answer is covered from you. You're unable to perceive the answer. Then you must go to Yerushalayim to bigger experts. Says Rashi here, ki yipale, kol hafla'a, says Rashi, every time the word hafla'a is used, it is lashon havdalah ufrisha. It means havdalah, separateness, shehadavar nivdal umechuseh mincha, a thing which is separate from you, it is beyond you and covered from you. In other words, it's outside of you and you don't have the technology to achieve it. That's what nifla means. You know, that's not what nifla means, because Rashi adds another meaning to it in Bereshit, the meaning of mufla, the literal meaning of wondrous, of a miracle, of something great, of something fantastic. And here Rashi defines the meaning of mufla, and he leaves out the wondrous aspect of it. He said it simply means something which is covered up. And here we come to the main principle of tonight's shiur. And that is that it's true. Romance is created by a lack of technology. That's it. When you don't know how to do something, or you don't know how something works, it's romantic, it's mysterious, it's wonderful.
in the literal sense of the word wonderful. But when you do know how to do it and how it works, it's no longer wonderful. It loses its magic. That applies in the world of action. That means to try and do something which is beyond you has a romantic aspect to it, a very noble sort of heroic aspect to it. What is heroism? To do something which others can't do. All the movies and all the books that have a heroic character to them. What does this heroic character always land up doing? Just going beyond what one would expect possible of him to be able to achieve. That's heroism. But the important thing to know is that in the Beis HaMedrash, when you're talking intellectually, a lack of knowledge, a lack of technology, doesn't create wonder, and it doesn't create romance. It creates amaratsis. It creates ignorance. And this is something which is very important to understand, because all too often, particularly in Torah, unfortunately, there is a tendency to cast a veil of secrecy around the Torah. You know, sort of, when you're on the right level, you'll understand that very complicated, I'll tell you one day. That's not Torah. That's not how we learn. Yes, there's an aspect of Kabbalah. There's an aspect of... Norman, what are you reading? Bible story is this. Aspect of Kabbalah, which is something else. But in our normal Torah, our normal halacha, the Torah which we learn, there's no wondrousness. It's all simple, clear, and if it's not simple and clear, there's something wrong. That's it. And don't dress up your ignorance in romance. Don't pretend it's all romantic and fantastic. Just call yourself an amoritz and know where you stand and learn. But don't try and imagine that a thing that you don't quite understand is all the more fantastic. How often to me has it happened that a person will go to a shiur, and even my own shiurim it's happened with, and I'll ask him afterwards, how did you like the shiur? He says, brilliant. It was fantastic. I said, what did he say? He said, it was far above me. I didn't understand a word of it. So what's so fantastic about it? That's not fantastic. It was above you, so you didn't understand it. So you went in an amoritz and you came out an amoritz. There's nothing romantic about that. There's nothing fantastic about not understanding. And one tends, in order to cover up for one's inadequacies, to cast this veil of romance around things which aren't clearly understood, and to get involved in all sorts of mystical things, and you know these, and we give them names that don't mean anything, or that we don't quite understand, and we give them terminology, and we throw around all this fantastic terminology, and if you ask somebody, what do you mean by that word? Well, it's a tifazach in Kabbalah. It just doesn't mean anything, it's just nonsensical. Halacha is halacha, the Torah was given to us, and it was given to normal intellects, and when Moshe Rabbeinu says that it's not nifleis mimcha from you, he's talking to you, not to Rabbi Akiva. He's talking to you and I, to every one of us. It's not beyond our intellectual ability. We can understand it. The two psukim that I brought you, the first one was when God says, Hayipalei mehashem davar, is there anything which is beyond the Ribbono Shloim? That's in action. Says God to Sora, I know you weren't laughing because you thought I was inadequate. You were laughing at the romance of the whole thing. It's just so crazy that the Ribbono Shloim should be able to give you a child and you're over 90. It's just so ridiculous. So you were laughing at the romantic aspect of it, at the fact that this is just beyond imagination. Says God, it's not beyond imagination. In that case, Rashi uses the word mufla, it's wonderful. You're laughing at the wonder of it all. That's fine. As in the case in Dvorim chapter Yudzayin, that doesn't apply anymore. What are you talking about there? About a Rav who doesn't know the din. There's nothing wonderful about that at all. So, provision is made. He can go and ask a Shaila further. He can go to Yerushalayim. But that's simply Kisoy. It's simply the thing is covered from him. There's nothing special about it and nothing wonderful about it. And so now I mentioned to you the difference between the Ramban and Unkulus, that the Ramban says that there's a wondrousness in not being able to achieve something, and Unkelus just uses the word kisui, it's all covered up. We understand that really they're both right in essence. In intellectual areas there's no wondrousness in ignorance at all. If you don't understand something, you're an amaretz, that's what you are. Nothing romantic about the thing you don't understand. The lack is not because the thing is so great. There is nothing which is beyond the ability of the human intellect. When you realize what has been achieved by people, by a Moshe Rabbeinu, by a Rabbi Yochanan, by a Rabbi Meir, by a Rambam, when you realize what standards have been achieved, Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak, Yaakov, even among the non-Jewish great people. And Einstein, and Newton, and Galileo, and Leonardo da Vinci, when you see what the intellect is capable of, there are none of us around here that can say, I didn't understand it because it was too difficult. You would have to be satisfied before you say that you have applied your intellect to the full. And we're told by people who are supposed to know that a genius uses about 6 or 7% of his concentration ability. Normal people use 2, average people use less than 2, and people who aren't very bright are using below 1 and below 0.5% of their potential concentration ability. And then you say, I didn't understand it because it was above me. It wasn't above me, you were below it. And there's a difference. In the intellectual world there's a difference. If you didn't understand, it's for one of 2 reasons. Either it wasn't explained well, in which case don't put romance about it and say it was fantastic, it was above my head. Say it was lousy, it was a rotten shoe because even somebody as bright as me couldn't understand what he was talking about. Or know that you weren't concentrating. That's all. It's one of the 2 things. But there's nothing wonderful about coming out of the shir after having learned something, not being able to understand it. And that kind of fake mysticism, or whatever you want to call it, fake intellectualism, is something which has to be banned from a base of medrash. It has to be banned from a place of learning Torah. From a place of learning Torah, clarity has to come out. One has to understand a thing clearly, know it, have it, analyze it, and know exactly where it fits in. However, in the world of action, it's not so. In the world of action, there are things which are too big for us. Our intellects are really spiritual, and spiritually we are unlimited. And our spiritual abilities and our intellectual abilities, talking about average people, are beyond limitation. Physically we're limited. So it's conceivable to have something which is physically beyond you, not because there's anything wrong with you, just because the thing is too big. It's not conceivable, though, to have something which is beyond your understanding. That means you're lazy. If it's beyond your understanding, you're lazy. If it's beyond your ability to achieve physically, you're not necessarily lazy. Might be, but not necessarily. So if you say, I cannot understand this Tosfos, what you are really saying is, I am too lazy to put in the required effort to understand the Tosfos. That's what you're saying. But if you say, I cannot run faster than a mile in 3 minutes and 59 seconds, what you're saying is that that's not possible for me to do. Okay, that's fine. Because there are limits on our ability to achieve physically, but there are not limits on our ability to achieve spiritually and intellectually. But you might say that in Torah there are limits. What you're going to say, the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is the revelation of God's will. Is it possible that we can understand it? We've often discussed the objection of people who hold that it is wrong to intellectualize and to philosophize about the Torah, to try and understand the Torah. And they say, you know, Torah is the will of God, it's impossible to understand it fully. Sure, it's impossible to understand it fully. But we have a pasuk here. Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo nifleisi mimcha v'lo rechokohi. It is not beyond your ability, even this Torah which I'm giving you falls into the same category as any other intellectual endeavor, and it is not beyond you to understand it fully as God wants you to understand it. And therefore, says Rashi, what does niflet mean over here? Ki yipale are yitkasi. There is nothing over here for which you should feel inadequate. What's the problem when you're sitting and learning Torah? You say, just me, I'm a little nobody. What am I going to try and understand the Torah? Says Rashi, that you dare not say. What we're talking about there is yitkasi. It's not something which is covered from you. There's no reason for you not to understand it. And here we use the word mimcha, from you. Because when something is covered, it's covered from you. The problem is with you. It's a personal inadequacy when something is covered. So we say, lo nifleti mimcha, it is not covered from you. In other words, you have the ability to understand it in full. And this pasuk of Torah is said to every single Jew who ever was born and ever will be born. The Ribbono Shel Olam has given every Jew the full intellectual ability to understand his whole Torah from beginning to end. That's it. And we have to know it. The Lo Rechokohi, and it's not far. That's from its point of view. Not only is there nothing in you which is inadequate to understand the Torah, but there's nothing in the Torah which is so distant that you can't get it, that you can't understand it, even if you're not inadequate. In other words, there's no subjective reason for you not to understand, and there's no objective reason for you not to understand. Therefore, says the Gemara, very simply, if somebody tells you, Yagati velo matzati. I've tried to understand the Torah and I don't understand it. Al tamin, don't believe you. Don't believe him. He's telling a lie. He didn't try. And if a person says, I understood it without trying, don't believe him. It's not easy enough to understand without trying. The Torah needs effort to understand. It can't just be understood without effort. So if a man says he tried and didn't understand, he's a liar. If a man says he understood without trying, he's also a liar. In the first case, he didn't try, and in the second case, he didn't understand. Yagati umatzati, if a person says, I've worked and worked and worked on this piece of Torah, and I've sweated over it and labored over it, and finally I understand it, timing, then you can know. And this gives us a bit of an indication as authority. When it comes to authority, how do you know whether a fellow is saying something which is right or not? Okay, so he has the basic qualifications. He's a rabbi, or he's a rov, or he's a somebody. And he's learned a little bit, and he knows a little bit. And he comes and he says, this is pshat in the posuk. This is what the posuk means. The measure of whether you can rely on that is to ask him very simply, how long did it take you to work that pshat out? If you say it's simple, you know, well, what else does it mean? But you don't have to accept it. But al time, and you must know that if he says, that's how I understand the posuk, and he hasn't really put the effort in, al time in. You can't believe that he's understood it. If he says, this has taken me years, then you can know this is genuine. There might be other views, there might be other ways of interpreting it, but Torah it is, genuine it is, but there are no shortcuts. So what does Unculus say here? He translates differently, strangely enough, and he says, Lo mefarshan. No, but not only is the Torah not covered from you, in other words, that you suffer no inadequacy in understanding the Torah, it's not even separate from you. Now, a thing is only covered if it's separate from you. If it's separate from you, then it might or might not be covered. But a thing which is inside you obviously isn't covered. It's there. Rashi says, look, it's separate, but it's not covered. The chiddush of this pasuk is that although it is separate, it's not covered. Unculus says, it's not even separate. The Torah is part of you. Now on the surface, Rashi appears correct because further on we're told, "Ki karov elecho hadavar me'od," the thing is very near to you. The thing is very near to you means it's near, but it's not you. That means it's separate but close. So it seems as if Rashi is right. But it's interesting that Unculus always translates me'od, very, as lachada. Always when the Torah uses the word ma'od, Unculus uses the word lachada. And lachada comes from the word chad, which means one. And it's very simple. Ma'od is very. It means sort of a superlative. In physical terms, what is a superlative? More. If I say I'm rich, then it means I have 1 million rand. If I say I'm very rich, it means I have 10 million rand. That's how we work in physical terms. So I say that I can run fast, that's a mile in 6 seconds. If I say I can run very fast, that's a mile in 6 minutes. If I say I can run very fast, that's a mile in 4 minutes. That's how we work in the physical world. What's in the spiritual world? The opposite. The closer I'm getting to the truth, the more things start tying up. The more they become one. Because the essence of the spiritual world is the Ribbono Shel Olam. And don't ever forget that Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. At source it is all one. And therefore in the Torah, whenever we're using the word ma'od, very, we're talking about a spiritual quality. A spiritual quality means approaching one. Right? It's simple calculus. In the material world, very means approaching infinity. In the physical world, it means approaching not zero, but one. In the spiritual world. And once that's the case, then it makes good sense. Ki karov elecho hadavar me'od, the thing is so close that it is one with you, it is not even separate. And therefore we understand Unculus. He says, no, it's not that the thing is covered, isn't covered up. The chiddush of the posuk is not, what the posuk is telling us is not, don't worry, it's not covered. It's telling us even more than that. It's not even separate from you, it's inside you. What's the difference between these two views? Very simple. It's a question of education, really. Is Torah something, a set of norms outside of us which we have to absorb? Or is it potentially within each one of us and we just have to let it flower? That's really the question. Are Torah values something inborn? And if we were really brought up right, we would all reach them ourselves. And it's natural to reach such conclusions. That's how Unculus holds. Or is Torah a set of systems which is godly designs, sure it is, that everybody agrees, but it's external to you and you have to absorb it to make it yours. It's not something which can flower out of you, it's something which you have to absorb into you. That's the question. It's really a method of education. And in essence, both are right. You remember that we defined last week Kedusha. And Kedusha is something which is both separate and one at the same time. That's what Kedusha is. We talked about the Kedusha of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's completely different to the world. The world is physical and God is spiritual. The world is transient and God is permanent. And the world is finite and God is infinite. He's opposite to everything in the world. And yet, if he would remove himself from the world for one moment, the world would collapse. So he is at once distant and similar. At once separate and involved. And the Jew in the same way. If a Jew runs away and tries to hide himself in cloisters and monasteries, that's not Kedusha. It's Kedusha for a non-Jew maybe, but it's not Kedusha for a Jew. If a Jew gets so involved in his day-to-day business that he forgets to daven mincha and he can't eat kashrus and he can hardly keep Shabbos and he can't come to a shir in the evening, that's not Kedusha. That's a businessman. But the Jew who's able to do both is able to be a businessman, but not a businessman like everybody else. He's a Jew. He's able to socialize with other people, but never to become part of their society. He's able to communicate with other people, but never to be at one with other people. He paints his individuality, his separateness, his distinctiveness. The Kedusha of the Torah is the same. How can we say the Torah is inside of us? And the Torah is designed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Torah is the closest we can get to the expression of God's will. Yes. But yet it is inside of us. There's both. There are both aspects to the Torah. It is something different and distant, and yet it is something internal and very much a part of us. And so educationally we have to work from both ends. We have to absorb in order to let it flower. And this concept is further defined and further explained, and with this we'll end, very clearly by the shir last week. That is, there are two modes of learning in Torah. There's Torah shebichtav and there's Torah shebaal peh. There's the written law and the oral law. What's the essential quality of these laws? Torah shebichtav is written law. That means, how do you learn it? By taking it in. You've got it on a book and you have to absorb it by reading it. That's how you learn Torah shebichtav. What is Torah shebaal peh? By talking it. That means oral. You've got to talk it out. That's how you get it. There's a constantly two modes of learning, two ways of learning, which the Jew always has to expose himself to. There is the formalistic part of Torah. There is the absolute part of Torah, that which is formal, strictly and carefully designed, and that's Torah shebichtav. And I mentioned to you last week that the written law is not just the Chumash and the Tanakh. But although halachically that's what the written law is, conceptually anything you learn from outside is considered Torah shebichtav. The Netziv has a whole system throughout his Perush on Chumash. He has a whole system where what you receive from your Rebbe is Torah shebichtav. And you remember, we've talked about it several times too, the concept that everything you receive from someone else is really Mishnah. Gemara are things that you make yourself. Gemara are things that where you're able to give it a new quality and a new angle to it yourself. That's really Torah shebaal peh. Torah shebaal peh is the dynamics of Torah, that which comes out of you. Torah shebichtav is what you absorb, and Torah shebaal peh is what you give out. And there we understand clearly the two aspects of Torah, and one understands the concept of lo nifles. Unkelus is talking of it from one point of view. Torah is something internal, and therefore, of course, it's not covered. The chiddush of the pasuk is that it's not even separate from you. It's part of you. Each one of us have Torah within us, and if we would just open up a little bit and remove our closed-mindedness and our narrow-mindedness, the Torah would develop and it would flow and one would find it coming. Rashi says, yes, that's right, the Torah should be about peh. If you've learnt the Torah shebichtav, if you know what the Torah is all about, and you've learnt from a Rebbe, then you can open up and the Torah starts boiling up inside you and it starts overflowing. That's wonderful. But what about the Torah shebichtav? That you've got to take in from outside. And therefore, says Rashi, what it's telling you is no. The Torah is outside of you, but not covered up from you. You're not in any way inadequate to understand it. And here we see the dynamics of Jewish learning. It's necessary to learn formally. It's necessary to sit down and to absorb accurately. One has to know exactly what was said. And it's one of the most harmful things to sit in a shir and confuse these two concepts. To sit in a shir and try and figure out whether what is being said is what you agree with or not. or to read a book and to try and figure out if the author is saying something that fits into your philosophy or not. Forget about that. Just understand what he's saying clearly. Once you've done that, once you've got that in your mind, once you've taken it from its written form or from its verbal form, and you've absorbed it and made it yours, now you can close the book and now you can start analyzing. And I always tell you this with Gemara, but it applies with everything. Don't start philosophizing and analyzing the Gemara until you can repeat the Gemara word for word with the Gemara closed. You're not entitled to analyze a book or a newspaper article or what somebody said, to even react and respond to what somebody said, unless you at least know what he said clearly. What does knowing it clearly mean? That you can close your book and you can repeat it accurately. When you can do that, then you start analyzing. And out of that analysis comes your originality. Out of that analysis and delving and figuring out, then comes the originality. But it's first necessary to absorb from outside. It's first necessary to take in. And then one has to delve and delve and delve and analyze and work and think and think the thing out once and thinking it out twice and then discuss it backwards and forwards. That's the intellectual dynamicism which is required in order to keep the Torah going. As I mentioned to you a little bit earlier, as far as I myself am concerned, without Talmidim one can handle Torah Shebichtav. Without people to listen to you, you can handle Torah Shebichtav. You can handle the written law. You can open your Gemaras and you can sit and learn all day. That's lovely. And you can learn an awful lot, and possibly from a quantitative point of view, if I didn't have Talmidim, I could learn a lot more. But from a qualitative point of view, from a dynamic point of view, there could be nothing that ever occurs. Because there is the dynamics of Torah, which is Torah Shebaal Peh. What I have to be able to give to you, as we discussed last week, is a response to a situation which you create. That means the Torah Shebichtav has to be clear with me, and it has to bubble over into a Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's something that could never have been achieved without you. So again, I want to take this opportunity on the last Shabbos of this year, the last Motzei Shabbos of this year, to thank you for what you've done for me over the year. And let me tell you that whatever I've done for you, probably what you've done for me is worth more, both to you and to me. And it's something which is deeply appreciated and which I hope will grow in excitement and dynamicism and meaningfulness over many years to come.